Welcome back to Master the Marketplace with ETLs. Hi there, everyone. This is Kunal from Master the Marketplace. We have a special guest on our show today, James Thompson. James, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on today, Kunal.
Fantastic. Well, James, to get started, I'd love if you could tell everyone a little bit about your background, a little bit about yourself.
Sure. So I am one of those rare former Amazonians who's still working in the Amazon space. I worked at Amazon between 2007 and 2013, doing a number of things, including being the first FBA account manager, trying to sell people on using FBA. And I ended up running the Amazon Services Group, which is the group responsible for recruiting almost all third-party sellers to the marketplace. About 6 years ago, I left Amazon and founded a company called BuyBox Experts with my business partner, Joe Hansen, who's based in Salt Lake. We also run the Prosper Show, which is a large educational conference for Amazon sellers. And I find myself pretty much immersed in Amazon issues all the time, every day. So here we are. We meet. Thank you.
Fantastic. Well, I'm looking forward to having this conversation today. Now, I believe you probably don't know this, or maybe you do, but I was told that you were one of the first account managers for the ETLs account. At the time, it was called Green Cupboards. Did you know that, or did you remember?
It's entirely possible. I have to be a little ignorant on this one. I was working with about 30,000 companies at a time. And so one of the things that I was responsible for doing was building the various emails that soon became the seller coach, selling coach tool that Amazon now has. And so I was sending out literally tens of thousands of emails every week from my email address at Amazon. And many people responded well to those and thought they had a relationship with me. That the problem was there were so many companies, I didn't really know who any one particular company was. So glad to think that your company thinks highly of me in terms of, oh, we know this guy going back a long ways. But unfortunately, I worked with so many companies that I didn't really get an opportunity to get to know very many of them at all.
Of course. And at the time, Green Cupboards was really small as well and just starting off. And of course, we're a different company today. But no, of course, it's just good to know that a lot of people know you in the office here. Let me tell you that. Great. Well, you know, I'd love to learn a little more about just BuyBox Experts and what do you guys do, and just, you know, how do you fit into the overall ecosystem of Amazon and the services that other sellers, you know, require right now?
So BuyBox Experts is a 115-person company. We work with brands specifically on the Amazon channel, brands that are struggling either to run a first-party or third-party business on Amazon, or brands that simply don't understand how to build a strategy for this channel. As I'm sure we'll get into in our discussion in a few minutes, brands typically have continued to do business the way they've always done business. Along came the Amazon marketplace with a number of unique challenges, including large numbers of unauthorized sellers selling products. For brands that aren't actively managing this channel, it's very frustrating because they don't believe they're necessarily in the driver's seat of being able to decide what happens to their brand. So our agency is a performance marketing agency specifically aimed at helping brands to use the Amazon channel in an effective way, but also to align what they're doing elsewhere to make sure that there's proper alignment of their branding, their distribution, and so on and so forth. So we've been at this now for just about 6 or 7 years, and you know, most of our clients are on multiple Amazon marketplaces. But given how you know how quickly things change on Amazon, it is a constant battle to stay on top of the latest development on Amazon and make sure that our clients aren't going to get blindsided by some new rule or policy that Amazon puts in place.
That's right. I mean, this is also a good segue into, you know, my first question to you, which was all about, you know, how has this marketplace changed over the last, you know, 10 years or so? I mean, mm-hmm. I know that there was a time when you could just throw something on there and it would sell. You know, it's a different marketplace today. So, you know, just given your experience, what are you really seeing on the marketplace? How has it changed or evolved over time? And what are things that sellers should be cognizant of today?
So if I go back to my early days at Amazon back in 2007, it was very much a land grab. We were talking to resellers and to brands saying, hey, we're an up-and-coming marketplace. You should put your products on this site because there's lots of customers and hopefully somebody will find your products. Well, that has obviously evolved quite a bit in the last 13 years, and we're now at a place where you've got 15 companies selling exactly the same product. You've got 1,000 versions of basically the same product being offered under 1,000 different brand names. You've got companies from all over the world participating, certainly here in the U.S. And quite frankly, you've got a situation where there's so much choice available to consumers. How do you help consumers find products that you want them to find? But also, how do you help your brand clients differentiate how their product is really meaningfully different from the other 999 versions of essentially the same product? You've got a situation today where Amazon advertising is now turned on and in full bloom. If brands or resellers aren't in a position to be able to pay for traffic through advertising or through, you know, possibly external advertising, I mean, it's very difficult to survive and thrive on Amazon if you don't have a mechanism for driving traffic. It used to be, back in the day, more than a decade ago, it used to be you literally just put your stuff in the catalog and enough people will find it by accident that you could make a solid business. Today, to be a successful third-party seller, there are so many different areas where you need to understand how to play the game effectively, that it becomes a situation where you literally need to have experts, whether it's an agency or a team of in-house folks, but you need to have a series of experts working on this channel. Gone are the days of, you know, throwing things on and just seeing what happens. There's just too much competition and too much activity from other companies that you'll get lost in the mix. 15 years ago, you could literally use the analogy from Field of Dreams, if you build it, they will come. That is absolutely not the situation today. You could be a major national brand and managing a business on Amazon, but if you're not playing by the Amazon rules, you're not going to find any light of day. And that's very frustrating for national brands that are used to having visibility in brick and mortar channels.
Right.
So, you know, those are just some of the big issues that have changed. Amazon is here to stay. It's the largest shopping destination for consumers, certainly in the United States and some of the other countries as well. And so it's hard for brands to ignore Amazon and say, I don't want to be there. I don't want to control my branding. I don't want to be in a place where I'm actively managing distribution. The reality is any brand of any level of popularity is going to find a way to get onto Amazon. There are so many ways that most brands don't control their distribution, and somebody gets their hands on the product, somebody puts the product onto Amazon. Before you know it, there's a thriving business for your brand on Amazon, even though you're not actively participating in that space.
Right. And where are all these sellers coming from? Do you think these are just international sellers from China, for example, that are trying to just get onto the platform? Are these fake products, unauthorized? Like, what's the distribution look like?
So 6 years ago, when I left Amazon, we recruited 100,000 new sellers to the platform, and I believe it was less than 2% of them were from China. After I left Amazon, there was a large, large effort to go after Chinese manufacturers and recruit them to become their own brands selling on Amazon. And as of a couple months back, I saw a report that said upwards of 48% of all new sellers on Amazon today are from China. These are primarily Chinese manufacturers who are using their presses and using their equipment to make their own brands. Amazon is helping them move the product directly into the United States and into Amazon fulfillment centers, but also helping them with advertising and so on and so forth. And what's happened as these foreign brands have been added is the importance of the brand name itself has diminished significantly. Mm-hmm. Yes, you need a brand name in order to get brand registry and lock down your content, but consumers are getting overwhelmed with brand choices. And the way that they are being presented with products, it's less about what happens with the brand name and more what happens with the unbranded keywords that customers use to find the products. And so you end up with literally dozens of brands that you've never heard of or might not even be able to pronounce that are now being presented to you as a consumer, and you've got to figure out, are any of these products suitable? You asked about unauthorized sellers. Yes, you know, there continues to be a rapid increase in unauthorized sellers on Amazon, in part because there's so much supply of customers. Mm-hmm. And so companies want to get in and find a way to get a piece of the pie. But you've also got brands that are not actively controlling their distribution adequately, making it easier for unauthorized sellers to show up. You talked about fake products. Yes, you know, unfortunately, there is a lot of counterfeit activity on Amazon. To be fair to Amazon, they're spending hundreds of millions of dollars to clean up a lot of that, but it's a constant cat and mouse game where once you figure out how to remove certain types of counterfeit activity, sellers show up with other ways to get counterfeit onto the site. And quite frankly, you know, if you have 600 million product listings on Amazon across 5.5 million sellers, Amazon can't be proactively looking at every SKU before it goes up for sale. And so the whole model is based on consumers evaluating products after they buy it and deciding whether the product might have a problem with it. And unfortunately, there's no way to, if you're going to take that approach, there's no way to avoid bad PR that will happen regularly with consumers getting something that is a flagrant counterfeit of whatever they thought they were buying. So this continues to be a problem for Amazon and will continue to be as long as they remain an open marketplace, letting pretty much everybody and anybody show up and sell basically any type of product on the site.
Right, right. And so so what's your opinion? Like, what should Amazon do about it? Like, should they take more, is there other actions that they should be taking, or should they just continue on with their strategy? Like, what options exist for Amazon specifically?
Well, let's look at what historically Amazon's been able to do if they find counterfeit. They can remove the listing, they can remove the seller, and that's pretty much all they can do. Mm-hmm. Earlier this year or late last year, they announced they were going to start working with local law enforcement. Quite frankly, until you have people being arrested, people being fined, people being thrown in prison for repeated counterfeit activity where they're knowingly moving counterfeit product, until that kind of enforcement comes in place, which is not something Amazon can do itself, but until you have those types of punishments in place, sellers will continue to find ways to set up 10, 20, 30 accounts and simply recycle through these different accounts and shift from one to the next as Amazon closes down one account. And that level of sophistication of sellers being able to move around and continue to disguise themselves,
right,
that has to be addressed. And unfortunately, that's not something that Amazon alone can do. One of my concerns with a month and a half ago, the White House announced that they wanted to crack down significantly on counterfeit products being brought into the country. Mm-hmm. You know, there will be a lot of pressure being put on Amazon to do something and make this problem happen. Well, again, I go back to what is it that Amazon can do? They can shut down an Amazon seller account. That's what they can do. And until you have local law enforcement and even law enforcement in overseas countries where some of the counterfeit product may be coming from, until you've got them involved as well and cooperating and looking for ways to, you know, have an effective task force across these groups, you're going to continue to have counterfeit product, because the reality is there's still hundreds of millions of customers on Amazon opening their wallets every day on Amazon. And so there's incentive for people to put fraudulent product on the site because they can make a buck, or they can make a lot of bucks very quickly.
Right.
And so it becomes a challenge for all.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so then, you know, let's move away from Amazon and then let's talk about the brand. Now that we know that there's competition on the marketplace, we know mm-hmm. that there are unauthorized sellers, fake products, the number of Chinese sellers are up to 48%, like you mentioned. So how should a brand strategize, you know, because they can't ignore Amazon, they can't ignore the marketplace space. So what options does a brand have? How should they think about their strategy on a platform such as Amazon?
So I like to start with certain basic assumptions the brand should take about the Amazon site. The first mistake that every brand makes is they're successful. They're popular. People want their products. You know, all your problems would go away if your product wasn't popular. But the fact that you're popular means somebody's probably going to want to buy it on Amazon. And if somebody's going to want to buy it on Amazon, there's probably at least one person behind that customer who's willing to go and find a way to provide product to that customer on the Amazon site. And so if you take the assumption as a brand executive that no matter what you do with Amazon, someone's going to find a way to put your product on Amazon, then you need to ask yourself, what am I doing to make sure that at a minimum, the branding experience on Amazon is consistent with everything I do in every other channel? How do I make sure that correct information, consistent information, accurate, up-to-date information is being used on my product listings? I want to make sure my products are not being misrepresented by some of these sellers who can so easily create product listings and put them into the Amazon catalog. I may not like the fact that they're selling my products, but I need to protect Amazon customers in terms of making sure that they properly are presented with information about my brand. A brand, as you know, a brand is a series of promises that you deliver on over a long period of time. Mm-hmm. And when someone comes along and misrepresents your brand and creates confusion for consumers, you have a situation where a consumer who sees your brand misrepresented on Amazon, they may not necessarily think very highly of your brand, or if they've experienced your brand elsewhere and now see it on Amazon, they may think, oh gosh, that brand is, you know, starting to sink, not doing very well. I think I'm going to go find some other brand that I'm going to go and invest in. And so for that brand that says, we don't really want to be on Amazon, but we recognize that the product's going to find its way on there one way or the other, I want to see brands going in, locking down brand registry, locking down content, making sure the catalog is clean, making sure that regardless of who sells the product, at least the way the brand is communicated is appropriate for whatever the brand's trying to do in all channels. Once you do the branding control and you make sure the brand looks correct, then you can start to ask the question, what do we need to do to control distribution? What do we need to do as a brand to make sure that we don't end up with 15 unauthorized sellers selling our products? That's a much more complicated discussion. I recently published a book on this particular topic because the reality is most brands have never evolved effectively to handle the unique pressures of the Amazon channel. We talked earlier about how easy it is for unauthorized sellers to show up and sell your brand, whether the brand wants you to be there or not. Think of the example of you're walking into a grocery store and you're going to buy cereal, and you walk down the cereal aisle and there's a bunch of different brands of cereal. Even though there may be a lot of choices, at the end of the day, if you buy any box of cereal, there's only one company selling you that box of cereal, the grocery store. But on Amazon, you literally have an experience where you would walk down the grocery store aisle and you'd have 50 guys trying to sell you the same box of cornflakes. And it's a crazy, crazy experience because some people will do a good job representing your brand. Some won't. Some will try to undercut each other on price. Some will offer you product that doesn't quite look like the version you're used to because maybe it was re-imported from another country. Some of them will offer you free shipping. Some won't. You can see that there's opportunity for customers to get very confused and, quite frankly, overwhelmed. And so the brand needs to say to itself, if we think this Amazon channel is here to stay, we really do need to have a strategy to make sure that we control our branding as well as control those companies that are going to represent our brand in this channel. We don't want consumers to be overwhelmed or, quite frankly, underwhelmed by the resellers that are in place to help sell our products.
Right. That's a good point. And then would you say that this strategy that you're talking about, clean content distribution, should this translate to other marketplaces as well? So should your online presence as a whole be pretty consistent across Walmart, you know, if you're selling on eBay? Like, mm-hmm. how do you merge the other marketplaces that are out there with the Amazon channel specifically?
So in the United States, in most cases, the Amazon channel is much larger opportunity for selling than you'll have in any other channel, including your own website. But if you first and foremost think about what do you need to do to be able to control branding on Amazon, the types of expertise and the types of discipline you'll put in place within your organization, you can take those same skills and apply them to any marketplace, whether that's Walmart.com, whether that's Amazon in Europe, whether that's eBay. I mean, you need to be in a position where you've developed the right kind of digital assets and you've found a way to push them onto these marketplaces so that your brand is consistently represented in these different channels. I like to take the approach that consumers are going to shop in the channels that consumers want to shop in. Mm-hmm. And while you may not necessarily like that your product's being sold in certain channels, the fact that consumers are shopping in those channels, if your purpose in life is to sell more product, then you've got to be in those channels where consumers are already shopping. Quite frankly, you know, the number of brands that we've worked with that don't have the right digital assets in place or have relied on their retailers to do all the heavy lifting of developing those assets and making sure that they're loaded onto sites like Amazon, that approach is a very dangerous one because it's going to create opportunity for people who don't care about your brand to represent your brand through various listings and create a very messy and confusing situation for consumers. So back to your original question, it's not that I focus on Amazon as its own strategy. but rather if you think of online marketplaces and what brands need to do to evolve the way they think about marketing and distribution, they need to be in a place that even if they've been traditionally a B2B company, they need to start acting a little bit more like a B2C company where they're developing the right assets. They may work with authorized partners who will put those products into these different channels, but they've got to make sure that their content is being pushed out onto these sites appropriately. Somebody's actively policing those channels to make sure the content remains accurate and appropriate for what the brand's trying to do, while somebody else in the company is focusing on how do we make sure that we only have approved, authorized partners representing our brands in these channels. So many of these channels make it so easy for anybody and everybody who has product in hand to go and start selling those products. And, you know, that's a very challenging situation for a brand that historically has thought that it could control the channels in which they ultimately get distributed in. These online marketplaces provide, an open door to pretty much anyone to sell anyone, to sell anything. And so the massive incentive for distributors and retailers to divert product either themselves or to divert to other people who in turn will resell on these online marketplaces, those are big, big issues that most brands haven't yet woken up to. And they don't realize that there are ways to solve those problems, but they require extensive amounts of discipline and learning how to say no. You know, most brands, they have a sales team whose job it is to sell more units. That sales team's job is not necessarily to also protect long-term brand equity. And yet, if you've got an undisciplined sales team that sells to everybody and anybody and doesn't necessarily keep an eye on where those products ultimately end up being sold, you can assume a lot of your product's going to get diverted into online marketplaces like Amazon or Walmart.com or what have you.
That's right. I mean, that's such a good point. It's such a different approach that one has to take when selling now, especially as you have an Amazon strategy. We get approached by brands at e-tails so many times just telling us, hey, we are selling to three other sellers. We'd like to sell to you as well. And we keep advising these brands that that's probably a bad strategy, that you're just selling and it's an open marketplace there. So I completely agree that you've got to start cleaning up your channel.
Well, what further happens is brands are still in the old mindset of not only do I want to sell to three or four different companies who sell on Amazon, but I want to hold all of those companies to some sort of pricing policy, like a MAP policy or an MSR policy, while at the same time not actively managing the unauthorized seller problem. And so the very companies that you've decided to align yourself with who are going to be your authorized representatives, they have the most to lose by representing your brands when they're not able to compete appropriately with all of the unauthorized sellers who are basically having a field day doing whatever they want to your brand on these different sites.
Absolutely. And so just to take it to another level, so say I'm a new brand that I'm kicking off, I'm starting a first to market brand. What should I do in a situation like this? Are the rules the same for a new brand versus an established brand out there?
I don't care whether a brand is new or established. The brand needs to go in and lock down its content and make sure that they've got appropriate branding. Assuming they've handled the process of getting the right content into the catalog, the question now becomes, how are they going to go to market? If they're going to sell on Amazon, they really have two choices. They can go first party, which very much is dependent on Amazon reaching out to the brand saying, hey, we'd like to represent your brand. Or as is the case in most situations, the brand says, well, we're either going to set up our own third party seller account or we're going to designate someone to be that third party seller for us. For brands that don't want to become Amazon marketplace experts, you know, it can make sense to either work with an agency that represents them or to work with an authorized reseller that represents them. But in both cases, they get the Amazon channel expertise and they don't have to learn it firsthand. They can get the expertise very, very quickly through a firm like yours or a firm like mine. And so you've got a situation then where now the brand is on the site, the listing is live on the site, but nobody's looking at it because there's 1,000 other alternatives to the same product. And so for brands that think that they can show up and, hey, I've got a better mousetrap than everybody else, well, nobody cares and nobody's going to find it unless you make them care and make them be able to find it. And so for brands that don't have the kinds of margins needed to drive traffic to their listings, it can be a very frustrating process saying, well, gosh, aren't there a couple hundred million people shopping on Amazon? Isn't somebody going to find our product? Well, they're not going to find your product when there's no organic search placement for your product yet as a new brand. and there's no traffic going to it because you're either not driving it from outside traffic you may be able to bring, or spending money on advertising within Amazon to drive eyeballs to your product. We have definitely worked with a number of brands that will not be profitable in the first 6 to 7 months that they sell product on Amazon because they have no traffic, no visibility, nobody's finding them in organic search, and they're having to spend a ton of money to buy their way up the organic search rankings so that eventually they can either have, well, I'm sorry, they're spending money on paid search in order to improve their organic search placement so that over time they've got sales, they've got sales rank, they've got some velocity happening, their flywheel's starting to spin, and they won't necessarily have to spend anywhere near that level of advertising down the road. But essentially, the cost of entry to get onto Amazon as a new brand can be rather significant. So, those are, I'm sure, some of the issues that you also face when brands that have never sold on Amazon, that have no broad visibility, come to you and say, well, you guys are the experts. Just figure out a way to sell us pallets of product every month. It doesn't quite work that way. And it's frustrating for brands that may have experienced success in brick and mortar channels where they got some of those brick and mortar channels to agree to carry their products. And lo and behold, because there's limited shelf space in a brick and mortar channel, the brand has actually found a way to sell just by being on the shelf because the shelf is limited. On Amazon, there really is unlimited shelf space, but there's only so much first page organic search shelf space. And that's really hard shelf space to get onto unless the brand is driving traffic itself to its product listings.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, to your point on brands approaching us, I mean, we get the same. A lot of brands approach us similar to how they would approach a brick and mortar store. And they would just come in and say, hey, you know, Kunal Etails, we'd really love for you to buy inventory from us.
Yes, yes.
And, you know, our answer to that as well, I don't think this stuff is going to sell, and we don't want to take an inventory position in your brand if we don't think it's going to sell. So, you know, our approach would be to maybe work with them in an agency like fashion for a period of time for the first 6 months or so, try to get them that traction that they're looking for. As you said, you know, get them onto organic search results, and then they make a decision whether we want to take an inventory position or not. So I agree. A lot of brands approach us sometimes with this view of, well, you guys are the experts, you know, take our product and sell it. And our answer is most of the times is no.
Right, right.
Right. And so, you know, in my opinion, I think all these problems on Amazon, or these, you know, the problem around competition, unauthorized sellers, fake products, has created this completely different market, you know, for services to help brands build their businesses on Amazon, you know, such as agencies or creative services or software or, you know, just sellers like ourselves. And, you know, some of them are raising money. Like, for example, we raised money, Tika Metrics recently raised money. So what's your opinion on just that new, this new market sort of getting created out there?
Well, I think finally, investors are realizing this marketplace is huge, but it's also very disparate. There are very few large, well-funded players in the space, and yet there's opportunity for that to happen. When I look at companies like yours raising money, I mean, certainly it makes sense for the companies that have demonstrated expertise in the channel being able to help brands get their products on the site, get initial traffic, get selling. You know, those are certainly very valuable services. And quite frankly, when I look at the very, very large media holding, or the marketing agency holding companies, a lot of these agencies do not have anywhere near the level of Amazon expertise that you might expect they would have. And so whether it's companies like yours, companies like mine, whether it's software companies that have focus on Amazon, these brands are already out there. They're looking for help. They're not finding it. And so for companies that can raise capital and grow to be large and create efficiencies and inexpensive services that these brands can leverage, you know, the issue is not a lack of demand. The issue is a lack of visibility of these different companies to make themselves known to these brands. And so being able to raise money and grow to be bigger, whether that's better services, whether that's better marketing and outreach, I mean, these are all capabilities that we would all love to continue to have, because the brands are there and they're not being adequately serviced by their major marketing agencies. I mean, there are definitely some exceptions, but you know, the traditional marketing agency will help a brand with its Google and its Facebook advertising. Well, to participate in Amazon and be successful, if we start getting into distribution control issues, different types of content optimization and catalog optimization and filing endless tickets with seller support. Those are not the kind of things that a traditional agency wants to deal with. And yet those are the nuts and bolts of what brands are going to need if, in fact, they want to be successful in this massive selling channel.
Right. No, absolutely. It's a different mindset. It's a different approach than a traditional agency. And I can't agree more. Hey, so James, recently, you know, to shift gears a little bit, recently Walmart announced this announcement around their Walmart fulfillment mm-hmm. services that mm-hmm. came up.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
as a competition potentially to FBA. So what's your take on that? Excited about it? You think it'll add any value to this world of distribution? What's your sort of take on this WFS?
So Walmart has made multiple attempts at trying to go after Amazon. Initially, they were using their stores as a pickup model for consumers. And I'm not surprised that didn't work. Who actually wants to drive anywhere and run into a store to have to pick something up when they can just drive home and the box is sitting on their doorstep? So I'm glad they've moved beyond that. Walmart, at least here in the United States, Walmart.com is tiny compared to Amazon.com. And while Walmart, I mean, I like the idea of having fulfillment services. The devil is in the detail here in terms of to what extent will Walmart be able to support very fast, very time-effective shipping to consumers from whether it's the back of stores or whether it's standalone distribution facilities. The network that Amazon has built today in the United States with its distribution networks, it took them almost 15, 16 years to get the efficiencies they wanted, because it cost billions and billions of dollars to build these facilities, not just building lots of them, but building them close enough to such a large percentage of the United States population that Amazon can now do inventory balancing and ship products to consumers in one day from, you know, a geography that might only be a couple hundred miles away from the consumer. That level of expertise and software development, that takes time to build. And so I like Walmart's announcement. I don't know how quickly they're going to be able to get to a place where they've got the network capabilities and the scale that not only can they compete with Amazon, but they can compete with Amazon profitably. I'm skeptical of the model that says, hey, we already have hundreds of stores all over the country. Let's just find a way to fulfill out of each of our stores. I don't think that's going to work. You know, when you actually tour an Amazon fulfillment center, you see the massive scale and efficiency of being able to pick boxes, get them all ready and get them out the door, not only to a shipping company, but to a specific shipping company based on the time of day that box is actually packed and ready to go. That's amazing levels of expertise that makes Amazon so, so efficient and be able to be profitable in shipping out FBA products. So until Walmart really digs in and provides more details on how they're going to build this network that's going to support this FBA-like competition, you know, I'm hesitant to see this happen. Lots of companies have tried to build networks of warehouses in different places to support large retailers, but it's really hard to do the inventory balancing. It's really hard to minimize shipping zones, and it's really hard to do all that plus be profitable enough that you can offer the service. Walmart historically has not had humongous UPS contracts the way that Amazon has. And so for UPS to compete and get the shipping rates from UPS that Amazon has today, or for Walmart to go and build its own trucking system that can provide, you know, the go-between for some of the FBA shipments that Amazon has today, you know, those things take a long time. And as long as Walmart is working on building these capabilities, we know that Amazon's going to continue to keep refining its and make it better and more efficient and so on and so forth. So
yeah.
I'm skeptical. I think it's a good step in the right direction. If I were an investor, I wouldn't be like, oh my gosh, I got to jump into Walmart stock right now. I would say, okay, well, you're about 15 years late, but you know, I'm glad you woken up to the fact that consumers like this free shipping shipped quickly to their home. You know, that's a good model. Figuring out how to build that and be able to compete with Amazon, It's going to take some time for Walmart to do that. This is a completely different business than Walmart figuring out how to build the next 100 stores. And so the expertise that they're going to need to build out this kind of network and make it cost effective for themselves and for sellers, that's going to take a lot of practice and a lot of experimenting.
Yeah, and people don't realize, like, Amazon started off as an operational company, right? It's always mm-hmm. been that way. And so they've got just the expertise, the scale, like you mentioned, the tech experience that is just going to be very hard for any player to compete with their distribution. And I'm with you there.
Kunal, I used to give tours of FBA facilities many years ago, and I would have, 15, 20 very, very large 3P sellers that didn't use FBA. I'd have them come on a tour with me, and I'd walk them around, and they would come in and they'd say, "Oh, wow, this is fantastic. Can I take some pictures of the facility so I can retrofit my warehouse to support the kind of techniques?" And while Amazon didn't allow photos, my comment to them was always, even if you could take photos, you have to understand that what makes this work is the software behind the scenes and the network of agreements with different shipping companies and abilities to optimize shipping to so many different shipping companies that you can create enough volume that you've got low cost through any one of these shipping choices. That's the secret sauce, the software and the shipping, not whether the shelves are stacked over here or over there in the warehouse. So it's one of those things where, I wish Walmart a lot of luck because I like strong competition and that will only make Amazon better. But it's going to take Walmart a long time to do this. And if they end up trying to support this simply through some small limited space in each of their stores, this is going to fail miserably. So they're going to have to invest, I suspect, in completely new facilities. And if you don't have facilities that can do individual order fulfillment today, gosh, Amazon has how many dozens of facilities in the U.S. alone today? And each of those facilities took time to build up and integrate to the rest of the network. So, Walmart's got its work cut out for it.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And speaking of distribution, are you seeing, challenges with the coronavirus now and, some delays there with your brands? Like what's your take and what are you seeing in the market right now?
So about half of our clients have some sort of delay in place right now. Whether we like it or not, most of us get product in some way directly or indirectly from China, whether it's component parts or finished product, it's coming out of China. What we're seeing is the coronavirus hit in late December, started to pick up, started to become bigger in January. A lot of our clients had already placed their orders, so they got product before Chinese New Year. Chinese New Year kicks in, everything's on hold, the disease gets worse, but sellers are not looking for product because they know it's Chinese New Year. Now that Chinese New Year is done, what we're finding is a lot of our clients' manufacturing is being delayed because they can't get component parts. So factories in China are supplying products to other Chinese factories that are making finished products. And the raw materials coming out of some of the Chinese factories, they're being 3 to 4 weeks delayed. Well, 3 to 4 weeks delayed there, plus possibly some delays at the actual finished product manufacturing. Yeah, we're seeing some fairly significant delays. Those kind of delays are going to create a much bigger problem for these brands here in the U.S., where they're going to have to manage stockouts. And as we all know, stockouts on Amazon, that is a cardinal sin. Mm-hmm. So how do you manage keeping your products in stock? There's a lot of strange contingency planning that brands are going to have to do, whether that's shutting off supply to non-Amazon channels, whether it's raising prices temporarily, whether it's cutting advertising temporarily, finding ways to reduce the likelihood of their products converting. Those are all painful steps to take, but they're less painful than having to find your product be out of stock on Amazon for 30 plus days. Because after 30 days, you have no sales rank history. You have to start all over. So I certainly hope that the delays that we see quickly get addressed because it's going to be very, very ugly for a lot of these brands. At the same time, we talked about there being so much competition on Amazon. There are going to be some lesser brands that don't sell particularly well but still have a bunch of inventory here in the United States, a lot of those brands are going to start to see more visibility than they expected, because some of the bigger, well-established brands simply can't replenish adequately. So that's going to be kind of strange, for brands that are second or third level brands that have never been on page one, but all of a sudden they're now on page one because they're the only ones with stock. Yeah, right. that's going to be a little weird.
Yeah.
The good news is Amazon consumers typically aren't very brand loyal. You know, most product search is unbranded product search. And so you're going to see a situation where a lot of consumers may not necessarily notice that the brands they've typically been buying are no longer in stock, because that's not the way that consumers typically shop on Amazon. So I think we probably have about a 2-month window here where, if problems can be solved on the replenishment for some of the bigger brands, I would expect that consumers probably won't notice a lot. The flip side is, if consumers are not running out to big malls where there's lots of other people, you know, I could see a situation where Amazon's actually going to do quite well, whether it's with food delivery, whether it's with people buying replenishables on Amazon. I think you could see consumers who historically haven't bought certain types of products online being more willing to at least try it out on Amazon, because the consumers are more cautious about going out into public situations.
Yeah, that makes sense completely. I'm interested to see how this all plays out. And I know, at least we at Etails, we have our contingency plans here. But yeah, a lot of our brands too are a lot worried and just trying to manage their supply chain right now, frankly, and hopefully all pans out. So, I mean, I really enjoyed this conversation, James. I mean, so much expertise from you, who has probably seen it all. But James, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today. I really enjoyed this conversation, you know, really learned so much today, and I'm sure our viewers would have, you know, enjoyed this conversation as well. So thank you again for being on, and I really appreciate it.
This has been my pleasure, Kunal. Thanks for having me on today.
Great. Well, thank you, everyone. This is Kunal signing off from Master the Marketplace. See you again on another episode. Bye-bye. Through conversations with experts in online retail with years of marketing, compliance, and inventory management experience, we seek to empower our listeners to master the marketplace. Thanks for listening. We hope to see you next time on Master the Marketplace with Etails.